Hi, this is Sue Bryce, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Shaki James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 9. Why do celebrities not care about stealing your photos? In this episode, a Texas school district has lost its mind, rapper T.I. gets caught using a photo and doesn't seem to care, an update on the Wyoming data trespass law, Voigtlander rangefinders are disappearing, we tell you why, something you need to know if you use Behance and care about your copyright, all that and more in Episode 9 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Sue, for opening the show. Love your work and your accent. And thank you, everyone, for joining us here in Episode 9 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. Today's show is going to be a little bit shorter as I'm podcasting in Chicago on a mini vacation of sorts with my youngest daughter. More on that later in the show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Some people seem to think that if they're rich and or famous, they can do whatever they want. And that seems to be true about rapper T.I. In this particular case, fine art photographer Laura Ferreira from Trinidad and Tobago found out that one of her photos of a woman in a carnival costume was being used by the rapper to promote an upcoming party he was throwing. Now, this is perhaps the least offensive thing that the rapper, whose real name is Clifford Joseph Harris Jr., has done considering his stint in prison for federal weapons charges a number of years ago. The photographer tells us here at Petapixel, quote, "I first messaged him to see if he could credit me for my image and commented the same request on the image as well. I did the same on Facebook when I discovered he had it there as well." End quote. Well, when T.I. didn't respond, she asked her friends and followers to comment on his Instagram photo, asking him to, quote, "give credit where credit is due," end quote. The rapper posted another image, but in this one, he clearly indicated that he knew what was going on. Ferreira says, quote, "the captions show that he was very aware of the requests, but said that I should be honored by him using my image and think of it as an homage," end quote. What T.I. basically did from this point was put it off on his party planners and said that she should be honored that they ripped her off. That pretty much sums it up. Well, she fired back with pointing out that he probably wouldn't be too happy if someone stole his music and didn't give him credit, let alone payment. As she tells us, quote, "T.I. also called me a B-word," I clean that up, "and says that nobody wants to use my photo for their party anyway, but he used my photo in his party," end quote. She says she tried reporting the photos to Facebook and Facebook-owned Instagram, but was ignored by both. She emailed T.I.'s publicist and didn't receive a response there either. But the very next day, she awoke to emails showing that he actually used her photo on ginormous banners inside the venue at his birthday party. Can you believe that? That is insane. It wasn't just posting it on Instagram and Facebook. They actually had huge banners commercially made. Amazing. She then contacted a lawyer in the United States. A call from that lawyer resulted in the photo being taken down from Facebook and Instagram, and she's now considering how to deal with this seemingly blatant case of copyright infringement. This just goes to show you that some people with a lot of money really don't care. They will steal your photo. They know that you can't afford to sue them, and they have so much money that if they get caught and there's a judgment against them, they'll just pay it. But to go and make fun of somebody and to belittle them when you've stolen their photo, that's just not cool. I hope she gets a lot of money out of this. Most of us talk about doing photography projects, but make excuses for why we never get around to them. I know I do. But for Brooklyn, New York-based photographer Porter Yates, he actually makes them happen. Through a combination of savings, his full-time job, and some money earned through his photos, he's been able to see the world and document the beauty and uniqueness of different cultures. He tells Petapixel that the goal with his work is to, quote, "reveal universal elements that express the human condition, as well as capturing people's relationships to their community and environment," end quote. Photo sharing service IAM just announced Yates as their Photographer of the Year and says that the photographer's, quote, "incredible portfolio of photography offers a unique insight into what it means to be an outsider," end quote. This guy has a full-time job, not as a photographer, mind you, and manages to travel the world for the love of photography and documenting cultures. I suck. Thanks, Yates. Months ago, back in May 2015, we reported on the Louisville Independent School District in Texas issuing student Anthony Mazur a notice to take down any and all photographs from his personal Flickr account, which had been captured using school equipment, or face suspension. Well, Mazur took on the school board and won the battle thanks to U.S. copyright law and support from his local community. It appears that the school board must have got their lawyers involved because now they're requiring students to sign a work-for-hire contract if they're using district-owned camera equipment, and thus they're surrendering their copyright protection to the district. Isn't that just wonderful? I think it's important to note here that it's the taxpayers who essentially pay for that camera equipment, and perhaps the school board has forgotten that. But I digress. Well, Mazur took to Twitter, posting the new contract, and it states that it applies to, quote, classes where images are taken with equipment owned by the Louisville Independent School District, and that any images of students taken by LISD students on equipment owned by the district shall only be saved and or posted on district computers and on the district's network, end quote. Now I ask you all, why do they care about this so much? Is it a power play? They're just creating an adversarial system with all this legalese that, in my opinion, is completely pointless. They're educators, and what they're doing is teaching kids that even if your community is clearly on your side, it doesn't matter because they're in charge and they can use the taxpayers' dollars to enforce this nonsense. This document forces the students to give up their copyright to any images they create and any, quote, based upon, derived from, or incorporating the images, end quote. You can tell that a lawyer had his hand in this because this document is covering all their bases. They're getting everything from the students. They're not giving anything back. This is a work-for-hire agreement, and mind you, they're not paying the students a dime. Why make the school district look even more mean than they already had? People likely had forgotten about this story, but just when you think it's over, nope, they had to bring this up again. It's pointless. I don't understand why they would bring this upon themselves. Since most students are likely under the age of 18, a parent or guardian must also sign this document. And students who fail to comply with the rules will be, quote, denied access to district-owned equipment and or press credentials, except for school-specific assignments, end quote. That's just wonderful, huh? It's the equivalent of no soup for you. All right, Seinfeld fans are dying right now. Everyone else has their heads tilted like my dog does when I'm talking to her. So these kids and their parents must sign this ridiculous document or else. No camera equipment, no press credentials, nada. It's basically a gun to the head tactic. They really don't have much choice now, do they? Not if they love photography and want to pursue it while in high school. They have to sign this document or else. I wonder what percentage of high schools around America have something similar to this. I suspect it's a small percentage. And you know what? They seem to be doing just fine without it. But the Louisville Independent School District seems to think that this is somehow a problem. And I say shame on them for bullying kids and their parents into signing this document. They should be ashamed of themselves. I want to know what you guys have to say about this. Leave us a voicemail and weigh in. Does your school district do this? If not, I want to know what you think about this work-for-hire contract. Maybe I'm missing something here. I don't know about you, but I think freckles are pretty cool. Some people have some really amazing ones, and it gives their face more character, and it makes them that much more interesting to photograph. But if you're trying to capture that, don't even think about shooting infrared. Reason being, they disappear. Who knew that? I know I didn't. Thanks to Toronto, Canada-based cinematographer Joe Simo, we can see what infrared photography does when photographing a subject who has freckles. Simo had his Panasonic GH2 modified so it could shoot in infrared, and in a really cool portrait he shot of a young woman, he placed a blue infrared blocker in front of the left half of the frame to filter out the infrared light and show what a camera would normally see. The right side had a 720 nanometer filter to block out visible light, and the resulting photo is really cool. He tells us, quote, infrared photography doesn't show freckles. You end up with this beautiful porcelain doll-like effect, and it is a very unique look. End quote. Now, you might remember that a little over a year ago in August 2014, we published an article showing what appears to be the opposite of this. Artist Tom Leverett showed how through the use of ultraviolet photography, people with otherwise freckleless skin to the naked eye actually had them, but they weren't visible in normal light, thus showing the hidden effect that the sun has on your skin through years of damage. This is one where you must hit the show notes and see for yourself. It is pretty amazing stuff. I think it's worth mentioning that if you're interested in either of these types of photography, there's a company which has been around for years called LifePixel, who can convert your old camera to shoot infrared, ultraviolet, full spectrum, and more. It's not cheap, but it's perhaps a good use for an old camera which you don't use anymore. And I'm sure there's probably other companies out there that do this as well. They range from a few hundred dollars on up to $600-$700, depending on the camera and what type of photography you want it converted for. So check it out. If you have an old camera lying around, this might open up an entirely new area of photography for you. I know of a few people out there who are using infrared photography to actually sell prints. That's difficult these days. Something different, people like the look, they want to buy it. So maybe give it a shot. All right, iPhones are great, but can you imagine TV stations replacing their fancy cameras with them? There's only so much they can do after all. They can't even optically zoom at this point. So there's that. Well, in Switzerland, they've done just that as a local TV station there has dispensed with their professional cameras and has gone 100% iPhone. That's right, 100%. As in, everything is now being covered with the smartphone. Amazing. I know the iPhone is awesome. I have the 6 Plus myself, but I wouldn't cover TV news with it. How's that even possible? According to Swiss newspaper Le Temps, the TV station Le Monde Bleu switched to iPhones this past summer when they outfitted each reporter with an iPhone 6 kit for shooting pre-recorded stories and for live shots as well. Their news director, Laurent Keller, said, quote, "It's a search for lightness and responsiveness, but also a way to reduce the cost of producing a newscast." End quote. Translation here, they wanted to save money. Lightness and responsiveness? Nah. TV cameramen and reporters are pretty darn good at getting the job done with the gear they've had for years. And that gear is much smaller and much lighter than it was even a decade ago. So I just don't fully buy it. In a photo provided by the TV station, we can see a reporter using his iPhone mounted to a selfie stick, as well as a stick mic plugged into the iPhone. Now, that's just amazing. I don't know how they get that done without being like you're juggling five different things at the same time. Back in 2014, Fox 46 in Charlotte, North Carolina tried something similar, but ditched it due to poor quality in the resulting product, attributing it to, quote, "technical problems and relying on journalists with little experience. It had an amateurish quality. Viewers turned away." End quote. Yeah, you definitely don't want that. The goal is to get more viewers, not less of them. And using iPhones for your videography, that can't possibly do anything but make your viewership go down, I'm thinking. No one's tuning in to see someone shoot video with an iPhone. Now, shooting video of someone shooting video with an iPhone using a selfie stick, I might watch that. That's pretty funny. But not actual video from the iPhone. You may also recall that in 2013, Petapixel reported on how the Chicago Sun-Times newspaper fired its entire staff of photojournalists and planned on training its editorial staff with iPhones for news gathering. Is this the future of TV news and journalism in general? I sure hope not. Imagine a call comes in from mom just as you're going live. That can't be good. If you're a fan of Voigtlander rangefinder cameras, you may be saddened to hear that Japanese camera and lens company Cosina has announced that they're discontinuing the Voigtlander Bessa 35mm rangefinder cameras and a host of accessories and lenses for them. So the Bessa R2M, R3M, and R4M are going the way of the dodo and will soon be gone. Thanks to declining sales, Cosina is yanking the entire Bessa lineup after retiring the R2A, R3A, and R4A about a year ago. If you're looking to get a Bessa, many retailers will still have some in stock, but supply will dry up with no more in production now. The Voigtlander brand is one of the oldest in photography, with its origins going back to the original optical company founded by Johann Christoph Voigtlander back in 1756. You may recall that that brand was sold to Raleigh, but Raleigh collapsed in 1982 with a company called Ring Photo picking it up in 1997. Since 1999, though, Ring Photo has licensed the Voigtlander brand to Cosina, which has been making and marketing Voigtlander gear. While the Voigtlander brand survives, the Bessa line and the associate items shall be no more. As you may recall, back in May, we reported about how the state of Wyoming passed a really ridiculous law, allegedly pushed forth by the powerful ranchers in that state. As a result, it pretty much made it difficult for photojournalists and documentary photographers to do their jobs without running afoul of the law. Well, the National Press Photographers Association, the NPPA, has decided to join the fight to get rid of the so-called data trespass laws, which is said to have been aimed at covering up the fact that many streams in the state have been contaminated by E. coli from their grazing cows. Recent laws passed there make it a crime for people to, quote, collect resource data, unquote. That includes the taking of photographs, or could, if the person intends to submit them to a federal or state agency. Now, this is just ridiculous. I can't think of much more that's un-American than wanting to silence someone's First Amendment rights. It would seem that to preserve their financial interest, they're happy to take away your rights, and that's not cool. So on Tuesday, September 29th, 2015, the NPPA joined a, quote, diverse coalition, end quote, of conservation, press, academic, and animal protection groups in suing the state of Wyoming in federal court in order to have these laws struck down for being unconstitutional. NPPA President Mark Dolan said, quote, NPPA members often photograph and record open land in Wyoming, whether documenting the environment, wildlife, weather emergencies, or simply to document and share the grandeur of that great state. The state of Wyoming has unjustifiably put photojournalists at risk of civil suit and criminal prosecution for this important work, and more importantly, they have jeopardized the public's right to receive this information and images photojournalists provide them, end quote. They also say that the, quote, laws are written so expansively that they could even be interpreted to criminalize submission of photographs to the National Park Service from popular tourist sites in the state, such as the Grand Tetons, Devil's Tower, and Yellowstone National Park, end quote. You know, that could be putting photographs on Twitter or on Instagram, etc., and tagging them with the National Park Service. That's how ridiculous this thing is. We'll keep you posted as this story develops, but there's certainly no doubt in my mind that these laws are going to be struck down. They are beyond stupid and un-American. Most photographers I know don't use the Behance service, but if you do, here's something that you need to know about. And if you don't use it, check with your friends and please let them know. The service's no use at all symbol is the same as the one for no rights reserved used by Creative Commons. In other words, it may appear to those visiting your Behance site that you've chosen to release your work into the public domain, and thus they're free to use it as one wishes. When you add a new project to Behance, the default license is a Creative Commons one that lets people use and/or share your work with certain conditions and restrictions, such as non-commercial and/or non-derivative. But if you don't wish to use a Creative Commons license, the other option is for, quote, no posting or usage without explicit permission, end quote. If you choose that option, however, your copyright icon changes to a circle with a zero inside, and that's what appears on your project's public page on Behance. Now, if you hover over it, a pop-up says, quote, no use is allowed without explicit permission from owner, end quote. But here's the problem. That's the same symbol used on Creative Commons licenses to indicate that the work is in the public domain. It's the CC0, no rights reserved symbol. Now, since most everyone looking for public domain imagery are intimately familiar with that symbol, they could very easily assume that it means the same thing on Behance. But it does not. So it's quite possible that if you use Behance and you have your images marked that way, they could be used, and that includes commercially. Now, while I'm not a lawyer, I can see how this could become quite a problem. Imagine a publication or another entity using one of your photos thinking that you've placed it into the public domain, but you didn't. They simply got confused with these identical symbols with different meanings. So let's say they use your photo commercially. Do they have a legal defense? After all, you didn't place it in the public domain. They just got confused and weren't very thorough. This could become rather messy very quickly. So it's very important that if you use Behance, you check into this and you check with your family and friends and make sure that they've got this thing squared away, because this could become an issue for them. Thank you very much to photographer and Behance user Jim Wetch for sending in this very important tip to us. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I'm in Chicago at the moment with my 11-year-old daughter. She's the one you hear at the end of the podcast. She's been a very good girl, so we flew from Salt Lake City, Utah to Chicago, Illinois, where I'm originally from, so she could see her favorite singer, Ariana Grande, in concert. Now, at my age, I'm nowhere near the target audience for Ariana Grande, not by a long shot. And judging from the crowd, it seems to be mostly preteen girls and creepy old men. Well, I figured that if we were going to be flying 3 hours to Chicago, we might as well make the most of it. So, without going too crazy, we got a couple of tickets which were about 20 feet from the stage at ground level, and I think you see where this is going, right? Now, professional-looking cameras, which is what they classify as having long, detachable lenses mostly, were not permitted, and my Sony A6000, even though it's rather small, would likely not be allowed in as well, especially with the Sony FE 70-200mm f4, because that does look professional. That's quite sizable, even for a 70-200 f4. The camera totally looks amateurish, which I love, because it is not. It is Superman on the inside, Clark Kent on the outside, as I tell people. It is really unassuming. But that wasn't going to be allowed in. So I decided on the Sony RX100 Mark IV, which came out not too long ago. Powered down, it's about the size of a deck of cards, and that was doable. So that for sure was going to get in, no doubt about it. And it did. At about $950 US, it's quite a capable camera. And once I've had a chance to fully go through my photos from the concert and to get my thoughts together on it, I'll have more insight on this. But I can tell you from shooting the concert with it that while it's not the camera that I would choose, obviously, if I was shooting it professionally, and I've done many concerts in the past, this definitely would be the go-to camera for me. Shooting in places where so-called professional-looking cameras are not allowed. No doubt about it. This thing seems to be a very good option if you need to get good photos, but a so-called professional camera is not permitted. It's a fun little camera, and it better be at that price, because it's, you know, almost $1,000. So stay tuned, and I'll give you the skinny on this rather skinny camera. As Petapixel's Michael Archambault writes, there are 10 things to do before flying your drone for the first time. For one, know your drone's limitations. DJI's Phantom 3s, for instance, should not be flown when temperatures drop below freezing. And here in America, we're starting to head into winter pretty darn soon. It's just not safe, and you may lose your drone. That's the last thing you want to do, is have it freeze up and fall out of the sky. You should also research federal drone regulations. Now, I think everyone knows to stay under 400 feet and don't fly anywhere near an airport. You're supposed to stay 5 miles away. That's a good regulation right there. You don't want to be anywhere near an airplane. You also shouldn't be flying over people, but that's difficult to do depending on what you're shooting. But it's one of the regulations. Also, make sure your battery is fully charged and try not to push it to the limit, or you may just regret flying too high without enough juice to land. This is one I haven't seen a whole lot of people do, and that's inspect your drone. You want to make sure everything is on there. Everything's bolted down, nothing is loose before you take off. You should also make sure your mobile device is charged, keep your firmware up to date, and allow yourself enough room to safely take off and land. Also, keep an eye on the weather, because not only will freezing temps mess with your drone, high winds aren't exactly their BFF as well. Now, one that many don't do, but should, is before you take off from ground level to hundreds of feet in the air, it might be wise to perform some low altitude tests to make sure you really are getting a good, reliable signal from as many satellites as possible, and everything seems to be in working order. If you can fly 10 feet or so in the air, move it around with ease, you're probably going to be okay. I say probably because a lot of things go wrong with drones, but chances are you're going to be okay. So do a little bit of testing, you know, about a minute or so. Remember, you've only got about 20-25 minutes of juice on the battery, so you don't want to spend too much time doing low altitude tests, but make sure everything's in working order. Also, check with local authorities. Read everything you can to stay on top of what's going on in the drone industry. Listen to this segment here on the podcast, for instance. And certainly don't do some of the crazy things we've reported about here on the show. Just be safe out there. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 9 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Now, if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm at LensShark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll be back in Utah, and I'll be seeing you all in episode 10. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.